Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on smart speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and the push for Europe is on, in association with Flowers Unlimited. Yes, that's right, our win at Burnley last weekend made it 5 wins from 6 that left our push for Europe very much on course. After a 3-week layoff, the games now come thick and fast. And first, we are reunited with Roberto De Zerbi as relegation-haunted Spurs. And then, we are reunited with most of our former staff as Chelsea visit the Amex on Tuesday. The game on Saturday will be De Zerbi's first in the home dugout at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and he'll be keen to get one over on his former charges. But all the pressure will be on his Spurs side as they try and extricate themselves from the bottom three, and we are certainly not going to be doing the old gaffer any favours. The game on Tuesday sees former Raw guest Liam Rossiniere return to the Amex for the first time since leaving, and his Chelsea team are, of course, full of familiar faces, but they're also not on a great run. Let's hope we can take advantage. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back the Argus's chief sports writer, the one and only Brian Owen. Hello, Brian. How are you?
For the one and only chief sports writer. But well, yeah, the one and only sports
only person
writer.
Left there.
Yeah. No,
Chesney Hawks
you.
Has got nothing on you, Brian.
Very well,
nothing.
Yeah, back from Burnley eventually and ready
you
to...
You dried out nicely.
It wasn't dry. It was a good drying day, I guess, but it was cold if you were out of the rain, I suppose, but it was cold. It was unbelievably cold and people were in a bad mood getting buffeted by that freezing cold wind. But job done. Out of the way.
Obviously, we'll come back to this in a bit, but you looking forward to seeing Roberto at the weekend?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I did I've enjoyed working with all the managers or head coaches, but it's funny how it comes around, isn't it? The first home game against Brighton, his first home game for Brighton was against Spurs. I was reading today 70 league games for Hertzler, which matches what De Zerbi had, the exact same amount. And it's a sort of scenario you couldn't have scripted even, a month or 2 months ago to have him come in here for his home debut or his home debut against Brighton, sadly not up against Hertzler on the touchline, but and Brighton going so well, and I suppose any Brighton fan will be thinking, or many Brighton fans will be thinking, almost wary that they're going so well. But in short, yes, I'm quite looking forward to it. But I like going to Spurs anyway.
We'll touch on that in a bit. But look, first, let's just recap what happened at Turf Moor at the weekend. And I think we kind of got away with one a little bit here. I mean, we've been very quick out in our assertions of certain elements of how VAR has been used. And there was 2 goals for Burnley in this one. And I don't...
If the boot was on the other foot, I mean, let's return to Danny Welbeck at Fulham. If the boot was on the other foot, you think, as has been put many times, this is not what VAR is for. It's not even what the linesman's there for. I mean, you can't tell blindly. It was actually a brave call, I think, because the flag went up on pitch both times. But it goes to show the nature of, you know, of how the human eye can respond. But when you saw the fine margins of both offside decisions, I do, in this instance, feel for the Burnley players because that's ludicrous. And where you've often talked about, AD, about the I don't know, the kind of the margins. I mean, they're supposedly nominally this arbitrary 5 centimetre margin, which only Liverpool have been beneficiaries of. And obviously, as we said, the line has to be drawn somewhere. But when it's that and it was literally second one. It was his knee bone almost.
Patella.
Yes, that'll be the one. Yeah. It's a very nice rice that's served with saffron and fish. Yeah. That's not what it's there for. I mean, to the laws of the game, and Scott Parker was magnanimous enough about it at the end of the day, because he's saying, you know, if those are the rules, those are the rules. That's what we all adhere to. That's what we abide by. But it's not what it's there for. Yeah. We scored 2. I think they scored 2 perfectly. Well, to the naked eye, they scored 2 perfectly legitimate goals. And I think that the linesman's call on it was not... Well, it's one of those where Heath probably thought it was more offside than it really was.
But Brian, that's what makes it unusual, isn't it? Because the linesman flagged both times.
Yeah, and when I looked at it, I thought, and I was sitting next to one of the Japanese reporters, and even on the replay and when they froze it, I thought I just couldn't see that it was offside. So it's difficult. I know you said Scott Parker didn't say an awful lot about it, but there's not much you can say, I guess, if it's a factually offside or not, but you can still feel either very disappointed about it or that it's not quite right. It's not. It's difficult, isn't it? Because maybe it is absolutely right and goals have been allowed for decades and decades, which were actually offside. But equally, it just didn't feel offside. And I wasn't the one, didn't Brighton have one quite similar at home to Burnley as well?
Crikey, now you're remembering things.
I think it was in the 2-0. Well, I'm only half remembering it. But no, it was pretty fortunate, isn't it? I mean, and that I was saying even before that, what was the difference between how far offside Welbeck was against Fulham and was not against Liverpool? So it is that the sort of thing where I think the margins started to tip Brighton's way when that Kadioglu shot hit the bar and fell to Diego Gomez at Brentford. But it is those fine margins. The vibe of offside wasn't there, but I suppose technically it was, no matter how much.
Yeah. I'd say even when you see the freeze frame and you think, well, Hinshelwood is leaning back far enough, and you think, what on earth has the technicalities picked up? And all right, you saw the freeze frame, you saw the graphic, and you think, really? You're kind of feeling that actually the graphic's wrong, but you know, if they've got their stuff in place that is that super accurate, then yeah, you go with it. And like I say, it was Welbeck offside against Liverpool, seemingly not. I think even then, I think they drew the line from the wrong place.
Well, at least they're not drawing the lines anymore. I mean, don't forget we have had them where they've drawn it against the wrong player. So it's
and that was an interesting one, wasn't it? Yeah. I actually got. I'm not betraying a confidence here. I got an apology from the club because I said to them at the half time. You said someone's actually put up. I think from a TV feed in America that they put this line on. I said the line's in the wrong place, and now you're just Brightonizing things. And then I got a message later saying, De Zerbi is going mad.
what I would say about that though is it almost summed up Burnley's season. Is there wasn't a lot of dissent around at the time. It was almost, it's offside then, is it? There wasn't like the outrage that you might expect at many, and including at Burnley on many previous visits. It almost summed up the way, the sort of resigned feel of their support. It was just, okay, it's offside. But obviously, we know, you know, they didn't get away with one, they got away with two.
It is very rare that you go to away games these days and you see such a partially occupied stadium these days, isn't it?
That's true, yeah.
So it was, I would argue that there was more shirt sleeve on this one than Welbeck's against Fulham, but it's just this touching of stories. But what it does mean, though, that was our third clean sheet in a row on the road, which is, I mean, if you keep a clean sheet, you've got at least a point.
I think as well is that two of the players you would want in a game like that would be Duncan Milner, this thing where it's been the experience and the solid backbone of the team, and two of them were missing, and again, they still managed to get, as you say, the clean sheet and the win.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you for a second there, but I think if you're talking about the general play, and I think we've alluded to it after the game. He said we can play a lot better than that. Yeah. I'm thinking, well, and it's not just the fact that it's Burnley, we should be taking them apart because they're rubbish and they've accepted their fate. No, you know, there are, as we use that phrase again, there are fine margins, whoever you're playing. But they acknowledged that they could have played a lot better, and there were times thinking we were so sloppy on the ball. Certainly in the start of the second half, we were so sloppy on the ball. I just, you know, they had one or two chances, you know, Burnley, but I never felt they posed that much of a threat. I thought that if we were going to concede a goal, it was going to be through our own sloppy mistakes, of which, like I say, in certain cases, there were too many.
There were a couple of occasions, or more than a couple, in the first half where Brighton seemed to cut through with their passing remarkably easily on the left side, particularly, and it didn't necessarily lead to an actual chance. The only thing I've said, like on the bits and pieces that I do, is that when you're there in that environment, it feels like a tougher place to go than it does from a distance looking at the league table and the results, and maybe even if you're able to watch a stream by whatever means, it feels like an unfriendly environment. Yeah, you said about dried out. I forgot that the rain was was really heavy, wasn't it, at times? But it was just it's just that bitterly cold and that wind, and like I say, nobody's really very happy. And I do think it's I might be wrong on this, but it's just a personal feeling about it. But it feels like a harder place to go when you're there than it does when you're looking from a distance.
I think I know what you mean.
If that makes sense, when you're, I, yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
No, I think it. I
Brian,
just think
if you handed that copy into your editor, I think he might hand it back.
No, I think I think when you're there, when you're actually there, and you feel the cold and the wind and the general, it feels more hostile than it probably looks on a TV screen.
Oh,
I would say,
yeah, because at times it was beautifully sunny, and then I think when the second half started, you think, and many fans will remember this particular game, and I couldn't tell you when it was, let's say early 90s. We were at Cambridge United at the Abbey Stadium, beautiful sunny day. It was a winter's day, early year, something like that. Beautiful day. Half time, absolute blizzard came down. Players came out, beautifully sunny again, and the pitch was under an inch of snow.
Yeah.
For those that were there and remember it, I mean, you know, let us know if you remember that, because I was there and no one was expecting it. And the player, and they ended up coming out with an orange ball, and the players were going, "What's going on here?"
Yeah. Well, that actually happened a couple of weeks ago for Hart in the Hearts game, didn't it? It was like, I think it was Livingston they were playing. Was it Livingston?
Oh, yeah,
Johnston?
Yeah.
And basically, it was a glorious April spring day, and then a blizzard came down.
Sadly, I was watching Sunderland against Spurs. It happened there as well, actually. I mean, it's not the pit the snow lays, but yeah. Yeah. Oh, English weather, eh?
Or Scottish in this case. But
who knew?
But, but Burnley did have a lot of early chances, and we weathered the storm.
I see what you did there.
Oh, no, gorgeous. I mean, it's always a worry for me, and for a lot of Brighton fans, that every time you see James Ward-Prowse line up against you, because he's just got a little bit of a number on us, and he very nearly actually. I mean, Bart made a good save from his free kick, which was actually followed up for the one that was disallowed by the Patella.
Yeah.
But he took his wicked corner that Bart had to save. From Jaden Anthony, wasn't it?
Oh, the low one. Yeah. That was clever. I didn't think that was. I wouldn't have thought that was a good save from the. Maybe it was because it came through bodies. The second half one. I thought that was the Brigham's worst moment in an otherwise good game. But but yeah, you were inviting him to hang those crosses onto those set pieces onto the wind, which you couldn't see on the TV, but you could experience at Turf Moor.
Sure.
Turf Moor is just a horrible, horrible place to go at the best of times. Anyway, I hate it. But we did get through it, and actually we opened the scoring, and it was actually Pascal Gross was having a really, really good game. Possibly one of his best since he's been back. Actually,
I'm going to say this. We're back because it's a point Brian made, and I think they made it on Match of the Day, how much fun we had down the left hand side. And Minto was getting into really good positions, and Kadioglu, for me, and I think you're going to agree with me here, AD, possibly player of the season elect. We're having a lot of fun down the sides there, and yet their final ball was still wanting. And there's Pascal Gross turns up on the left with admittedly a very nicely played ball by Minte, but the way he picked out Weefer was absolutely, well, it's grotesque. I can't think of it. Grotesque. Is that the adjective for Pascal Gross? Is grotesque?
No, I don't think so, because it was completely the opposite. But
grotesque.
It was there is a nice view. Maybe it was on the Albion. Was it Brighton Unlocked? Where they got a camera on picture, sort of where pitch level behind the byline, and you can sort of see what's happening there. Minte played he got the ball back in the first place, didn't he? Sort of chased it out towards the touchline, and I thought with him, he had that air shot, because there was a decent bit of service by Hinchwood, which should have led to a goal. But other than that, one thing I've noticed with Minte is he seems to be looking for passes, looking to find teammates a lot. So I think that's one thing he's developed.
I'm glad you said air shot, Brian, because that's exactly what I've got written down here.
It was actually the same swinger that Hinchwood did after
it was.
Mitoma's
it
good work against Liverpool.
Yeah, and wasn't that Pascal Gross quick throw in for that Minsay one, if I remember rightly? So that was a good bit of play.
Now, I'm probably wrong here, and I usually get my stats on this one from you, Brian. So, pressure. But I make that was Mats Wiefer's goal. Does that make him the 20th goal scorer this season?
I didn't put a number, no, but I know they've had a lot of different goal scorers, and he's a new one to the list. So I haven't written anywhere how many it was. So I don't know where you got that from, but it is a lot of goal scorers, and I think there's two or three who've only scored in the League Cup. So
like yeah, Tom Watson
did.
Being one of them, Bascali.
Yeah, Harry Howe probably. Yeah, Harry Howe. So, but it is a lot, and I think the last time I looked, Arsenal were the only team who had more, but I haven't looked. One thing I should have looked up actually this week, but I haven't. But it is a lot of different goal scorers.
I've got a list actually here. So we've got obviously Danny Welbeck, Gomez, Ayari, Gruder, Van Hecker, Simas, Hinchelwood, Kostoulas, Minte, Mitoma, Ruta, Bascali, De Kuyper, Gross, Howell, Milner, O'Reilly, Veltman, Watson, and Wiefer. That's 20.
Yeah, still no dunk. On the set piece. I don't know who else is missing. There's one or two, probably there's who should have scored by now. Ferdy's not on there, is he? I don't think so.
Ferdy's not on there. No, it'd be nice to get the complete set, actually. It'll feel like a proper Panini double-page spread then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but it's that thing you always say, Al. It's about you'd rather have a 20-goal-a-season team than a...
No, I'd rather have an 85-goal-a-season team rather than a 20... I mean, if you're going to have a priority, don't get me wrong, I'd rather have both, but... I'd rather have an 85 goal a season team rather than a. What I did like, actually, along talking of scoring, is I don't think it's something we've touched on, even though it was a few weeks ago, is that as a result of the League Cup, we had both a leading scorer and the leading assist person in our squad. That was a nice stat to have.
I think leading fouls as well, wasn't it? For Gomez.
Well, as in committed or received?
Committed, yeah, committed. There was a few others. There was leading goals prevented, I think, Jason Steele or most saves. There was a few different ones, but yeah. But FIFA's been getting in those positions. He's been getting in centre, and it's been something I've been meaning to write about. He's been getting in centre forward positions from right back in open play, and it's quite interesting how he's doing that. But he has to see him in that position where he scored that first goal. I think the finish was the surprise, but not the fact that he was there.
It was left peg, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it too late for him to make a break for the Dutch World Cup squad? Do you think?
Well, I don't really know the sort of ins and outs of their squad and who they've got, but if he's, it just depends if they've made the mental adjustment that Brighton have made that he's a right back. It is another, again, something I should be following up. It's another story idea, but Hertzler was talking in the press conference and he says he should be, he deserves to be.
This is a German saying this, by the way, so he's not trying to scupper Netherlands chances, is he?
but no, it'd be nice, wouldn't it? I don't know enough about their general options, and secondly about how they see him in that right back position.
Well, this is the thing, is it's the nature of versatility. I think it's probably one of the reasons Gross was able to get into the German side. It was about his versatility. He could be one of those people who, I don't know, it's a bit like taking a wicketkeeper batsman, isn't it? You think, well, that is two spaces taken up by one person. I think
do you need to do that though? It's whether they think they need to do that. I mean, it's total football. They should understand it.
They should do. Yeah, so you've got someone playing right back and midfield and now scoring goals up in the box.
Yeah. So it'd be nice, but I don't know what else they've got. Enough about what else they've got.
But was it not the case that by the time, and I know you want to get onto this, but I'm going to mention it now. By the time he got the second goal, Veltman was on as right back, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was, yes.
So where was Wiefer playing? Or didn't it matter?
I'm trying to remember which round it was, if one went in front of the other.
I think Veltman came on probably with a good 15 minutes to go, and their second goal was scored with about four or five minutes to go, something like that.
Yeah,
I'm pretty certain that Wiefer was playing further up the pitch by that time.
Yeah, but a good finish to what I thought was a little bit of an untidy bit of play.
Yeah.
And that was it then. Then that was time to go home for most of the Burnley fans and the Brighton supporters, where we were literally in row Z. The back row of our stand is row Z at Burnley.
Brilliant.
You could hear them so loud, so clear, you know, Sussex by the Sea and Brighton from the South and all that. So really good. Just gave a sort of a 5 minutes to really enjoy the win.
Veltman didn't come on to the 88th minute, by the way.
Was it as late as that?
Yeah, I thought it was quite late. But I didn't
know that.
But yeah, so I mean, it was a game. I mean, we had some really good chances in this game. I mean, Minte had, like we mentioned, the air shot. He had one where he well, actually, it was a bad ball from Hinch. If Hinch had actually played it through to Danny Welbeck, he would have been clear for him on goal. But he mishit it. It went through to Minte, who ran into a crowd of players and couldn't get a shot away.
Yeah.
Obviously, there was another beautiful ball from Pascal Gross right in the corridor of uncertainty that both neither Danny or Hinch could actually apply the finish to.
I think I'm getting a bit fed up with those ones, the ones that go flashing across the six-yard box and Welbeck is back on his heels on the D.
He wasn't at his sharpest, was he, quite in terms of the goal-scoring aspect, the centre-forward part of his game. Mm. But was that one where he... That, like you say, if he'd have made that run in front of the defender a second earlier, he probably would have turned that in. There was one where he didn't quite catch the ball properly early on and just sort of bounced it to the keeper. So, no, he wasn't at his sharpest in front of goal, but he did his bits.
You know, that's what a 3-week layoff would do to you. You need to be playing, I think.
But, yeah, that just happens, I suppose. But, he did his work. Yeah.
With that in mind, he should definitely go to the World Cup then, shouldn't he, right?
But
like we mentioned, Vifa did get his and Albion second. So, like I said, 20 goal scorers for us this season. That's good going. And like I said, the third clean sheet on a row. So
wouldn't it be nice if each of those 20 scored another two goals each? Just think how much better off we'd be. I know it sounds a lot to ask. I mean, because we're asking for another 40 goals. But just two each more.
Yeah, that would be great. But okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We have brought you an association of Flowers Unlimited, Al.
We are, who are at 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. You can get all your goodies from there. Well, goodies, when I say goodies, they say, I love you very much. Flowers and chocolates and champagne and all associated gifts. Head down there. If you want to get a 20% discount, just tell them you're an Albion season ticket holder. The flowers that I told you about last week were duly delivered yesterday, so that's Tuesday. And we're very appreciated.
Julie's excellent at delivering.
Rubbish. Absolute rubbish. But Flowers Unlimited are not. I can do my links there. It's not a problem. So good. So good. Or go to flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk. And so thank you very much indeed to Dave Costa at Flowers Unlimited for sponsoring the Albion Raw.
Yeah. I'll tell you what is funny, Al.
I don't know. Spurs going down?
That would be quite funny. But no, but what is funny is a chap called Jim Daly, who we had on the show last week, and he's bringing his brand new comedy show to Brighton's Comedia on the 30th of April. And we had a competition to win two tickets for that. So and
we
for
still,
your
can
opportunity.
I just say, it's not we had, we still have. It's still live, it's still running.
It's still running until the 22nd of August. Until the 22nd
of
April.
Not that late, mate. Yeah. The Reverb solicitors, he means the 22nd of April.
But so for your opportunity to win two tickets to go and see Jim's Match of the Daily comedy show at the Comedia, just answer this question. What competition are Crystal Palace playing in Europe this season? That's it. And then you can go and see Jim. It'd be amazing.
And if you think you know the answer, just jot us an email, thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk, and we will pick the winner this time next week from all the correct entries.
Fantastic. Now, Al, coming up is the Reverbathon again. It's coming round again.
It does seem to be quite it's actually 14 months since the last one. But yes, Radio Reverb, it is a community radio station. It operates by sponsorship donations and grants. We don't accept advertising on here. So the shout out that I've just given you a few minutes ago is the kind of thing we're doing, rather than having a sort of a, you know, and we would just stop for a break kind of thing. We give a shout out to our sponsors, which is great. But Radio Reverb must pay for its licenses and pay for its rent and its heat and lighting and electricity and things like that. So if you can help this brilliant community project, which is now fast approaching its 20th year, we are hosting the Reverbathon, which is a fundraising do for the radio station. We don't tend to like going cap in hand to the public, but if you can help us, that'd be great. So 2nd of May, we are back in the studio at the Open Market live, 12 till 1. Guests to be confirmed, but we'll be asking you very nicely to spare a few shekels. This is Bank Holiday weekend we're talking about. The following day, they'll be hosted at the Hope and Ruins. They'll be, Reverb will be broadcasting live from there. I think, I'm not sure, it's mostly speech shows with like the Albion Raw on the Saturday, music shows on the Sunday, not exclusively, we can chop and change. But if you want to pop by and blow raspberries through the studio window at the Open Market at midday on May the 2nd, you'd be more than welcome to pop along. But if you do so, we'll be emptying your wallet for you first. And so, yeah, 2nd and 3rd of May, it'll be the Reverbathon at the Open Market on the Saturday and the Hope and Ruin pub in Queens Row, Brighton, on the Sunday.
And of course, alongside Flowers Unlimited, we are looking for other sponsors for the show on that day. So if you've got a company or a business that would be able to sponsor us on that day, just please contact us at thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk.
More to that, you can actually donate to Radio Reverb anytime you like, really. Just go to radioreverb.com and hit the donate button that's on the homepage and throw in a few shekels, anything you've got left over from the night at the pub that you didn't fancy going on. So do please do help this brilliant community project.
I'm Dean Gallagher of Brighton Hove and District Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. Being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123 or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
Now, Brian, it's very much Friends reunited this weekend. Well, this week, really. What with the reunion with Roberto on Saturday and then Liam Rossini on Tuesday. The game at Spurs, it's a bit of a funny one, really, because, I mean, I think it's almost a little bit of a free hit for the Albion because it's like the media narrative is not concentrating on us at all. It's all about Spurs and their plight and they're then trying to get out of the relegation zone.
Yeah, it is, but I think quite often the game, in terms of coverage, is about what the other team are doing. When you look at what lines people are trying to get, reporters from the Nationals are trying to get in the mix zone afterwards, it's usually it's quite often a story about the other team. Yeah, this is, I think, as you said at the start, couldn't really have made this up, could you, how it's all fitting in. You also got Bruno in there as well, was the as the link to the past.
Well, that's an irony, isn't it? Because Bruno left the Albion because he didn't have a place under De Zerbi.
Well, no, I mean, hadn't he gone?
No,
I mean,
he went Potter, didn't he?
He went out of loyalty to Graham Potter, who was the head coach, who took him on for his first coaching job. So there's probably a whole debate to be had there again about how Bruno's departure is seen and his legacy. Personally, I think it should be a good legacy, and that he went because he was part of a team with Graham Potter, and it was loyalty to Potter and his coaching team, or it was loyalty to the club, and it was loyalty to himself and his family. So I don't suppose the assistant manager gets a reaction at away games, but if he were to get one, it would be hostile when it should be friendly. I think De Zerbi will get a good reaction from Brighton fans, I would have thought. You might tell me differently, but and which way will it go? I mean, there is this theory that De Zerbi took 5 games to get Brighton going, so he takes a while, but it sounds like he's not trying to implement too many different things. Obviously, Roy Keane, speaking on Sky, thinks that he'll learn a lot from the Sunderland game and that Brighton will pay a price for that. But Brighton are the settled team and Spurs a little bit, obviously, a bit turbulent.
Are you surprised that Roberto's taken that job? Because he's on a hiding to nothing, really.
I think I suppose you can't always choose when you get jobs, but I think it probably underlines the allure of the Premier League. Just get in any way you can, keep them up, and then you've got a summer to build and start working again. And if you back yourself to keep Spurs up, and they were outside the relegation zone, obviously, when he went there. That's what makes me wonder about this, you know, Leverkusen and the Hertzler talk. I just think the Premier League, even from really strong leagues, is the one that people want to be in. So I guess if you've got a chance to get in here, and I suppose London might have its appeal as well, but if you've got that chance to get into the Premier League, you can't always choose your time and your opportunity. And it did sound initially, wasn't it, there were reports that he didn't want to take a new job until the summer, if I remember rightly. There were suggestions that they had to persuade him to come in now. But I think it's just those prized positions within the Premier League. If that's when you have to take it, then you do.
Yeah. I'm going to fundamentally disagree with you here, Ady. You said it's a free hit, as in we're on a high, you know, we've got nothing to lose. I think the opposite. I can't help feeling the weight of expectation from maybe other Premier League fans, not necessarily clubs. They're not going to be that churlish, but certainly from other Premier League fans who, let's face it, we're all churlish, feel that it's our duty almost to beat Spurs.
Yeah, you know, I was talking
to a Wolves fan last night. He's accepted his fate. He's going to Lincoln City next season. That's fine. He wants to go to Spurs next season. He said, you know, you owe it to the rest of the Premier League not to mess this up for us. I mean, there's still another five games, so we've got to be seen to be doing our bit. And more to the point, I don't think we owe De Zerbi anything. I mean, it's not to say that we owe him badness, for want of a, but God, I sound like Trump there. We owe him, sort of, you know, the players will go out there and be professional. So there's not going to be any concern. And as you alluded at the top of the show, Ady, we've got something to fight for. We've got a target to aim for. So it's not as though our players are on the beach. Far from it. And that's the nature of having sort of so many European places. I mean, with the relegation, we're probably down to what, the last three from six now, aren't we? Something like that. Whereas the European places, you know, there's probably only about two or three clubs who are thinking, well, our season's done. We're not going up. We're not getting to, you know, we're not going to Europe. We're not going down.
The European, we'll come to about that in a bit. But I mean, as it stands at the moment.
My point here is that no, it's not a free hit. No,
no, it's not. And also, it's the eyes. What you said there is something I was thinking as well. The nation will, Brighton will have the attention of the footballing nation on Saturday evening because of the Spurs story. And usually what Brighton are doing goes a little bit unnoticed. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit, it's like they might get a good win at Brentford and it's like, oh, look at us. Look what we've just done. We've just won at Brentford. Don't forget about us. But here it's going to be attention and possibly expectation as well. And that's not always something that I think they have coped with brilliantly.
In some corners, it will still be seen as a bit of a shock because Spurs massive. Yeah, yeah. Irrespective of the fact they're having a terrible, terrible season, it will still be seen as Brighton beats one of the big six. I mean, obviously, the big six is clearly not the top six. I mean, we were talking about big six in terms of, money and facilities and, you know, all the various things they have that go in to make them the sort of the multi-billionaire club that they are.
The rich six.
Or the rich six, if you want to look at it that way. Yeah. They're still one of the... And this is the story is, frankly, what on earth is a big six club doing at the bottom of the table? Everyone's got their own theories. And I've seen some decent articles being written about it as to how and why it is. But for me, far too many of them are just focusing on one thing. And this is actually a story of too many things coming together in a toxic mix. Now, some people talking about it off the pitch, people talking on the pitch. We're talking about for every bit of success, there is the failure. So for every reason there is success, there is failure. And let's look at, for instance, Sheffield Wednesday, still, you know, a reasonable sized club, but because they have their main reason for failure is because of the people running the club so badly. You get someone in who's going to run the club well, they'll do well, and so on and so forth.
Yes.
You know, there is so many reasons as to why Spurs, and it's not just one. So you can read these articles, and like I say, a lot of them are very interesting. I mean, the one I read about was, I know it sounds like a daft headline, but Spurs players, the ones that they've actually there, team that they've got in, I've got players who are fast, they're quick, but they can't pass. And obviously in the Premier League, you need to have all these various things where the data told the people trying to get these players in don't go for them because they don't fit the Spurs model. And all they want, all the Spurs hierarchy wanted was for the data to confirm their acquisition that had already happened. and it didn't do so. And this is one of the reasons. And I'd like to think that the Albion are a bit more savvy than that, that they'll actually make the decision based on the data rather than make their decision and get the data to confirm.
Well, you know, failure is the mother of success, Alan. But it's...
Child is the father of man, said Wordsworth.
it's going to be an interesting one, though. And, you know, I mean, like, I've got that stat that the comparison between Fabian and Roberto, Fabian has won 28 of the 70, Roberto 26. But there's two different teams. Roberto had
different
better
seasons.
Players.
He had Europe going on at the same time. It's different courses, isn't it? It's like comparing golf scores over two different courses.
But anyway, we'll find out what gives, and it's on to Tuesday.
Sorry, before
Liam...
you go that, can I just say that actually the one thing that sort of gives me heart here, and I'm sort of bucking for a bolt of lightning here, is that it's very rare that the Albion play poorly two games in a row. You'd like to think that, and actually, there's something I was talking to with, was, of all people, was actually Richard Reynolds the other day. I didn't realise this because this season, people around the clubs were calling him Fabian. And Richard went to him and said, why are people calling you Fabian? And he said, because that's now how my name's pronounced. And he went, but hang on, we all called you Fabian last year. Why didn't you say anything? Well, I didn't want to be rude. So apparently, according to the man, his name is Fabian, not Fabian. I didn't know this. He didn't correct anyone. Brian, is this something you're familiar with?
No, not really. And also, maybe there's the... On the BBC or the Premier League Guide to Pronunciation, he calls himself Fabian.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if that was him. And I've never actually asked him about it. I've asked him about the umlaut and if we can not put the extra E in, because I was told not to do it by my editor when I did, even though it's grammatically correct. I haven't said the Fabian thing. But he does say that on the Premier League Pronunciation Guide. But what I didn't know was whether he was doing that. I thought that might be sort of come towards us to anglicise his name. Because I think sometimes, not just footballers, I mean, my wife's from abroad and she likes her anglicised name. She doesn't want to have her name produced, pronounced correctly. So I didn't know if he liked his anglicised name. So
I love this. I used to work with a woman who she would anglicise her name. Now, her name, she was French and her name is, or was, still is, Genevieve. That's the anglicised version. The original French pronunciation is Genevieve. And I actually prefer the French name. I think it's lovely, but she always anglicised it to Genevieve.
He does say Fabian, to be fair, on the Premier League. But I don't know if Germans... You do get these things. So it's like Pulisic, isn't there, who calls himself Pulisic because Pulisic is the American mispronunciation of Pulisic. So... I think I probably called him Fabian generally, but even when you're saying it quickly in conversation, it doesn't always, you know, you can't always tell the difference anyway, but no, he'll answer to both.
Before we just move on from this, of course, next week we will no doubt be talking about some interesting refereeing of the psychedelic variety. Having seen that would you like to remind our listeners, Al, who the officials are for this weekend?
We've got the dream team of Stuart Atwell is the referee and Jared Gillett is the VAR man. I mean, I think I did refer to them as something that I can't really say on the radio on our WhatsApp group. No, it's not good going. I mean, all I'd ever say is that the Premier League really wants Spurs to stay in the Premier League. Let's put it that way.
And of course, Roberto was in charge when we had those. Not one, not two, not three, not four, but five. Five incorrect VAR decisions.
Yeah. You've got to wonder. That's so much of a coincidence, is it? Could it be a coincidence? Well, that's what I'm wondering. I don't know if they know about these things. There's so many different fixtures, isn't there? But it just felt incredible. I had to go and check that about three times before I wrote that story.
The only way that makes me think that Beelzebub really hasn't got his hand in this is the fact it's not Michael Salisbury. But, you know, if Jared Gillett falls ill, who knows?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
like you mentioned, we have more friends coming to visit us on Tuesday with Liam Rossini bringing his Chelsea side to the Amex alongside with João Pedro's first return. And I'm sure that Mark Cucurella will very much enjoy his visit. I'm not. We won't dwell on that too much, but it's again, Liam is having a tough time of it at the moment.
I think the nature of this, both Spurs' job and the Chelsea job, is one, I think you've got unforgiving people who operate the club, but two, this is not helped by a slightly, and I am fully aware of who I'm talking to here, by a slightly overzealous press pack, who also like to big up the inverted commas pressure in order just to get their copy. You know, it's not something that Brian will do here because Brighton isn't one of the big six and it's blah, blah, blah. It doesn't have that particular sort of assumption of success or the demand for success. Yes, we always want a demand for better, but not necessarily the one that actually says we must be winning trophies every single year. But at Chelsea and at Spurs, now I think the press have actually finally cottoned on to the fact that Spurs, and they should be, you know, targeting a lot of their ire more at the boardroom rather than the one, you know, one person, blaming one person for the entire club's downfall. And let's face it, it's a series of one person at a time at Spurs this season, is absolutely ridiculous. And Chelsea is a similar basket case example of that, where Rossini has been in there for 5 minutes and is expected to hit the ground running. And this is, let's face it, this is a gig that, frankly, I don't think he should have taken, and if he should, not yet. But, you know, he has. He's going to be honest about it. And yet, any time that Chelsea don't win every game 4-0, you know, he's going to get slingbacks. My attitude is, and not that I care too much for Chelsea or for Spurs for that matter, but if you're going to have a manager, usually a decently thoroughly respected person, just let them get on with their job and not have everyone just screaming blue murder at them about how much pressure they may or may not be under.
But, I mean, they still might get a trophy. I mean, there's FA Cup semi-final, so I mean, well
exactly. I mean, there's a basket case. When there was a few weeks ago when some fans turned on Hertzler during a game, some things do take a lot of forgiving. You know, you're getting sacked in the morning. Does anyone think that this is going to affect Tony Bloom's mind whatsoever? I'm sure you speak to him more often than we do, Brian. I mean, it's the thing at the club is always just about stability rather than knee jerk, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just calm. I mean, that was sort of copycat singing, wasn't it? The sacked in the morning. I think the Rossini is interesting because he's him and say Pocognoli, another one. And when we're trying to think who could be a future Brighton manager, inevitably you think about people you know, you sort of keep an eye on how they're doing. Probably Tony Bloom will come up with something a lot more original than that. But I think when he was at Strasbourg, obviously he's closer to home now, there were plenty of people keeping an eye and thinking, is he a future Brighton manager? Let's see how he gets on. But
I think what's evident with that is I think that a recent link to the past, or, you know, whether they're an ex-player or whatever, I think these days has very little weight to it, doesn't
it? No, it does. But I just think that it's an easy one to think of. Will Tony Bloom be keeping an eye on how he's doing? Because it's hard to cast your net across the whole footballing world. But no, it does happen in the same way that De Zerbi will be linked with Brighton players, even though players very rarely, it's not as often as you think. You know, how many players did he bring from Shakhtar? How many players did Potter bring from Swansea? Doesn't really work like that. But I think Rossini does things a little bit differently, which don't totally fit the mould of how we want to see Mr. Manager do things. And that can maybe irritate the press. And I think Graham Potter had that a little bit and Hertzler has had that a little bit. But they don't totally fit the mould of a football manager at times, whereas De Zerbi is just classic football manager, classic football coach, and fits a lot of the sort of almost stereotypes or images of what you expect from your manager, and that helped him become so popular so quickly. And just sort of going back to that, 70 games for De Zerbi, 70 games for Hertzler, and yet it feels like De Zerbi had a whirlwind romance, a marriage, a honeymoon, a divorce, a separation. It is 70 games where it feels like Hertzler is still sort of walking around, you know, he's looking in the courting stage, so to speak, or still walking around.
Speed dating evenings have gone wrong.
It just feels like those 70
games. He hasn't
games
even got
so
a second
different.
Base. It's a terrible
well,
stage.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying anything bad about it. I'm just saying that it was a whirlwind. 70 games for De Zerbi felt like almost a lifetime, where 70 games for Hertzler feels like still building, you know, still a lot more to do. But
I've said this before a few times, and I still believe it to be the case, is that when De Zerbi came in, we were actually on the rise.
Yeah.
You know, we're in fourth place. We just stuck five past Leicester, and it should have been a sixth, and so on. And we were in a really good place, and De Zerbi, fair play. You know, he came and leapt on that. Whereas when Hertzler came by, one, it was after the manager and the club had kind of fallen out. You know, I think sort of respectfully fallen out, but fallen out nonetheless. De Zerbi's team had largely, certainly weren't playing with the same intensity after that particular Roma game. You know, even to the point of losing to Man United and losing to Chelsea, which we rarely do these days. So I think Hertzler had to start from a bit further back also losing certain players who, one or two have come back, but, you know, Hertzler, I think, had to start from a bit further back. And also, as we said earlier, has not necessarily had the same quality of squad that does. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not to say, oh, De Zerbi only did well because he had a good squad. Listen, Spurs have still got a decent squad, and look at them. So it's not that simple a parallel. De Zerbi obviously was brilliant for us, but you know, for the whole thing of, you know, and we had one absolute stinker of a game, but because the results didn't go our way, you know, that's when you get that reaction. And like I say, thankfully those at the top of our club versus, you know, comparison to some others in the Premier League, those at the top of our club have a sense of stability and have a plan.
Yeah. Just come back to that Chelsea, though. When I saw that they got Port Vale so in the cup, so Chelsea would be midweek, my initial thought was that's not good for Brighton, because, again, that trio, Dunk, Milner, Welbeck, will they all be able to play Saturday and midweek? And so maybe we've seen Boscagli, how he did, so he'll play at Spurs, and then Dunk might come back in, I guess. But maybe, again, having to make those two changes at Burnley and losing those experienced pillars and still getting through has maybe eased those concerns a little bit, that if it's not Dunk, Milner, Welbeck, the levels will fall.
I think there's, you know, I don't think that, certainly from the fans' perspective, I don't think that too many fans have concerns about Boscagli.
No, not at all. But I, obviously, you thought that it looked like the team was built on that backbone. Yes, but yes, they've actually lost two of it, and also had Welbeck not at his best, but still come through. So,
yeah.
It's going to be an interesting. I mean, with Danny, he's pretty much, well, he's played most games this season. He's pretty much started most of them. There's been a few where he hasn't. Where, I mean, and obviously losing Simas so early in the season was a blow. Obviously, Kostoulas has like kind of disappeared off the face of the earth.
Yeah,
a little bit,
yeah.
Which is disappointing. So if Danny can't do two games in the week, presumably Babis will come back in at some point.
Well, Rutter seems to be ahead of him in the queue at the moment. I mean, whether you agree with that or not is another matter.
I mean, we know that George is not a number nine. He needs someone alongside him. He works better alongside Danny.
The only thing I was going to say quickly is they play Tuesday and then they don't play the following Saturday. I don't know if that makes any difference into their thoughts on the minutes and the workload, as opposed to having a midweek in between two weekend games.
I mean, and having the 3 weeks off as well may play into that as well in terms of player loads.
This is the point about concertina in games, isn't it? I mean, as Justin Brentnell, our friend here, who would actually come on and made the excellent point recently, is that Hertzler has to pick two teams for two games in one go. So he's got to look at which. I mean, obviously, like I say, he hasn't got Dunk for the Spurs game, so I think that might be a bit of a shoo-in, in as much as, okay, well, make Boscagli and Van Hacker sort of run themselves ragged, absolutely. But there's certain other things, like, for instance, what I was going to say was, given the sort of like the number 10 roles, and it's going to be a matter of time, I think, incidentally, before Hinchwood starts banging them in and giving the new role he's playing. But God, did he look miffed when he got taken off at Burnley. He looked really cheesed off, which is, you know, on a certain level, you don't want too much dissent, but you also want to. I mean, this is a fellow who does wear his heart on his sleeve. He's got. He's already got a UEFA B coaching badge. This is an intelligent lad, and you know he. I think he just felt that, you know, he can feel a goal is coming, and I get the feeling he's frustrated that it isn't.
Well, he hasn't actually scored since he's been in that more advanced role yet. So
and yeah, he's taken plenty of shots. I want my best in the stats are that he's probably got the most shots off.
You've reminded me. I spoke to Bobby Zamora and Glenn Murray about that, so I should write that up before they go to Spurs, where he scored 2 goals last season. But yes, they had a little bit to say. And also, if you don't mind me plugging, you mentioned Tsimas there. I met him yesterday at a Brighton and Hove Albion Foundation event, and really good to talk to. Really optimistic. The story will probably be out by the time you've run this podcast. So, but have a look at it. I really enjoyed meeting him. His English is excellent, and he spoke really well. And also met Matt O'Reilly, and we'll be running that next week.
So, are any of the long term ones who said they're out for the season? Are any of them going to get a cameo at the end of the season, or are they genuinely out until summer?
I don't know, but I don't think they're particularly. Certainly, Tsimas isn't close. I don't know about Webster, but I don't think he is. And obviously, Solly March played. He's back as such, but he's not really at full power. Yeah. But I saw his 45 minutes for the under-21s recently, and he just looked like he was so enjoying himself. So, yeah, hopefully he'll get a little bit.
It was nice for him just to be back out on the grass, isn't it, really? Just be playing football again. So it looked like he might not be for quite a long time. So,
yeah,
it was. I mean, I think that he will. He's a player that could come in this run-in. And if we do pick up some positive results in these next 2 games, I mean, the European push is on. I mean, it's very complicated. I mean, it could go down to 8th place. I mean, a lot depends on Aston Villa, to be honest,
Frankly, all we have to care about is us keep winning. If we keep winning, we still don't get into Europe, then so be it. But
I mean, as it stands, 6 points separate 6th to 14th in the table with 6 games to go. That's how Constantina, the middle of the table, is.
And therefore, everyone's thinking the same thing that we are.
Yeah. But, Ryan, so, I mean, this week, there's been a few stories knocking around, particularly in the European press, about Jean-Paul Van Hecker not agreeing to a new contract, Vaart Verbruggen likely to be going, so it could be a double Dutch exit in the summer. What are you hearing on stories on the same?
I think it's I mean, one of the posts I saw from Germany about Verbruggen essentially said he might go, but he might not, which is probably sums it up. Van Hecker, there does seem to be concern, doesn't there, that he hasn't signed yet. We know that Hertzler said in our press conference last Friday about they need to talk and they want to keep him. They'd like him to be captain. So I think they're really keen. Obviously, they're keen to keep both of these, but I think Van Hecker in particular is seen as potentially the real sort of future of the club.
Yeah.
But
Love to know who's in the room with all these people. And now, admittedly, I think the Van Hecker story was quoted in the Dutch press.
Yeah, it was from Holland.
I'd love to know who's in the room, because surely they have NDAs until such time as all the time, you know, that no one speaking on behalf of anyone is actually going to talk to the press.
Yeah. Well, I suppose if he hasn't signed the new contract yet, then all the time he hasn't, there's that he hasn't signed it. The story is that he hasn't signed it. I don't know. There will be others mentioned as well. Gomez will be mentioned with clubs, maybe Kadioglu. I think he already has done with Manchester United in Turkey. But those two would be, I guess, the two you're looking out for, especially with the World Cup.
I mean, we all know what the Albion transfer model is.
They will sell somebody, but not too many.
I mean, the interesting situation is, I would say, it is more likely to be Verbruggen, particularly with the goalkeeping situation at the moment. Well, we've got Carl Rushroth is about to be promoted with Coventry. He's likely to be their player of the season as well. He's been absolutely outstanding.
Yeah. I think the one interesting thing with that is that he and Beadle, who's a little bit further back than, I mean, Rushroth's the one to look out for, but they both predate, I think I'm right in saying, the current squad, the current staff come into the club. So you don't know what ideas Hertzler might have, even the goalkeeping coach might have. By the way, the goalkeeping coach being Verbruggen's big ally and the one he's always worked with, is it asking too much that that's a little help for him to stay at the club? But they might have other ideas. It might not be they weren't the ones who brought Rushworth to Brighton, so they might have other ideas on a goalkeeper, which isn't even Rushworth. But he's the best goalkeeper in the Championship, I think. And he can play with his feet, which he can play with the ball at his feet, which is necessary. So that's not a bad position to be in. I don't see loads and loads of him, but...
He's a player I've got a big interest in. I've watched his progression. I mean, we used to watch him play for Worthing. And he was outstanding there. And apparently, he was being linked with Barcelona at the time he was at Worthing.
Yeah, I remember that. I even asked Graham Potter about that to laughter in the press room. I thought, well, maybe I should ask. I just wonder if he wasn't related to Brighton at all, would he even... He's one that Brighton would be linked with or be looking at if he wasn't already their goalkeeper. But it's interesting. I think for Bruggen and Van Hecke at the moment, at this very early stage, are the two to keep an eye out on.
Yeah, I mean, all I know is that Jason Steele is just good at darts. So,
well, plan Z is Jason Steele, and he can still do the business. So,
did you see his 180 at the darts this week? That's a sensation.
That looked good. I mean, I saw that on the club website. I did actually go to the darts as well, but. Yeah, that looks really good how they actually staged that. It wasn't just throwing a few darts at the board in their restroom or whatever, was it? They actually did it as a proper imitation darts night. So
Lewis Dunk is always photographed at the darts, isn't he?
He was there, yeah. He was there. Obviously with the suspension. Didn't need to get ready for Burnley, so he was there in a couple of hours. Yeah, but no, that was quite a good event. I'm not the biggest fan, but I quite enjoyed that.
Absolutely. We're back to, I think, probably what we've got to get used to, and it is the irritation of the silly season. And when you get to social media and Paul Hayward's phrase, citizen journalists, they're quoting some fairly arbitrary sources. Now, for instance, online, Fabrizio Romano has actually had more than a couple of journalists write takedown stories on him. So I think his star is falling. And yet some people hold a lot of sway by what he says. But yeah, there's a lot of these stories. And like I say, as Brian's just pointed out, well, he might go here or he might not go here. And just about every single story that comes up is unsourced. It's unquoted. Van Hecke hasn't signed a contract yet. Okay, what do you make of that story? Well, here's 250 words of absolute gibberish that I've just made up all about it. Brighton being the club that we are, who are both buying and selling club. Yeah, we're dismissed as a selling club, but we're a buying and selling club. Mm. We're going to have that the whole time. And I think that the real sort of reaction, the genuine reaction is to, have another beer and just ignore it.
So you mean the rumours that we're going to be signing Manuel Neuer aren't true? Blimey.
Yeah, who knew?
Shocking. Absolutely shocking. That's all we've got time for. Just before we do, a quick note, Women's FA Cup final semi-finals details have been announced. They are at St Helens on the 10th of May. It's live on Channel 4, kickoff at 12:15. Or if you can, get along to St Helens. Are you going up there, Brian?
I don't know, to be honest. It's the day after Wolves at home, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So, I really don't know. I think I would. Yeah, I'm not sure. I was kicking myself that I didn't go to the quarterfinal, but it was when I just
you weren't
had a few
expecting
days
us
off.
To do well, though, were you, Frank? No, you weren't expecting us to boss them like that.
No, but I did go to the league game at Arsenal, so I could have made. It was just I was on a few days off with some family commitments, what have you. But I watched it, and that was so impressive, and what a stunning first goal.
It is absolutely brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I'm so made up for the girls. I really am. But that is it. That's all we've got time for this week. So thank you very much to Brian Owen. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Ady Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB. And of course, on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Don't forget to enter the competition. Answers to the Albion Roar at yahoo.co.uk, and we'll see you all again next week. Cheers. Bye.
Now keep on dancing. Keep on doing the jerk. Shake it, baby. Come on and show me how you work. Now you're in motion. Dancing in a family.